What are your relationships like with your parents or your adult children? There are often challenges in those relationships or even distancing. But when parents get older or frail, those relationships might be forced to shift in new directions. Cynthia Dearborn grew up with parents who were both abusive in different ways, and she was estranged from them both at different times. But having moved from the US to Australia, one day she got a phone call that changed everything. Cynthia, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary.
That phone call was from your dad's wife, Beth. What does she say at that moment?
That's right, my stepmother. It came out during the conversation. She hadn't actually intended to tell me, but it came out that she was moving out of the home she had shared with my dad for 30 years. She was moving out in 9 days. Now, what this meant was my dad would be left on his own there, and my dad had dementia. He wasn't actually able to live on his own. She had helped him, and he had helped her, and as they had been aging and having multiple health problems, mental and physical, they'd sort of got on okay kind of thing. And then suddenly, you know, in about a week and a half, Dad would be on his own. So I then had to figure out what to do. I was here in Sydney, where I live, and my dad and stepmom were in Seattle, where they live.
So, I mean, what went through your mind? And perhaps I guess we need to tell the listeners the context in which you were making this decision. What had your relationship been like with your dad when you were young, Cynthia?
Well, when I was little, when I was very little, it was very fond and affectionate when I was like a toddler. And then from about the age of 4, I remember problems beginning and things being difficult. There was abuse in my home, violence in the home. I was very, very fond of my dad and also scared of him. He would erupt in bursts of rage, kind of at any given moment, it seemed to me. And so I was connected to him, certainly. Certainly we loved each other, but there was also a lot of strain and difficulty in the home.
So you're thinking, okay, I've got 9 days to deal with this situation. And give us an indication, Cynthia, of the level of care that your dad needed. Was he just getting a bit vague, or were things more serious than that?
Things were more serious than that. On my previous visit, I had found him outside in the street. He lived on quite a busy thoroughfare, breaking a piece of glass with his bare hands, smashing it on the road and picking up the pieces and putting them in a paper bag. This is a street where there's a lot of cars whizzing by. So I was trying to get him out of the street before he got run over. And his whole focus was, he was telling me, no, it's safe, don't worry, because he had put a styrofoam container, like a leftover container, in the bottom of the bag. So the glass was not going to hurt his hands that were holding the bag of glass, of broken glass. So he had no understanding that cars and trucks whizzing by might hurt him, in fact. So that was an alarming moment when I realized just how much his judgment was impaired by the dementia. It was his short-term memory that was quite poor by then, but he also, you know, wasn't able to make decisions that would keep himself safe. And he certainly wasn't capable of living on his own in a house by himself.
We're speaking with Cynthia Dearborn. She's an author. Her latest book is called The Year My Family Unraveled. And I'm interested in the stories that you might have too of how you've had to deal with the relationships that you grew up with that might not have been ideal. If you then cared for an older parent or accepted an adult child back into your world. So, Cynthia, what kind of decision-making process did you go through? Was it kind of stepping back and saying what is the right thing to do, an ethical decision, or was it about examining your emotions and working out whether you could cope with going to see him again? What did you think of?
Yeah, a good question. For me, it wasn't really a decision-making process. I knew immediately that I would be going. My stepmother said, I will leave him to you. And I said, yes, of course, immediately. I always knew that my dad, as an only child, and my dad had no one else who could help him but me, no other living relatives. So I always knew that I might be in this position someday. I just didn't expect it to come next week, you know. So I didn't really have a decision-making process. I knew that I would go to be by his side to help him because he was so vulnerable. And I guess by then, too, I should say, though we'd had a difficult relationship in my childhood and my teenage years when he didn't speak to me for some time, we had since then, since I'd moved to Australia, we had a regular, you know, we were in each other's lives. Like I said, there was a lot of fondness. And we did have regular phone calls and regular visits where I'd go back overseas. So things had kind of stabilized into a sort of a, you know, a workable, doable, enjoyable pattern when suddenly he was going to be my charge. And I had a whole life and a job and a partner and things going on here. So yeah, it was a large decision in a way, but it was an easy decision. Though it was a priority, yeah.
I do wonder too, I mean, you've talked about the fact that he could be very up and down as to temper. He was physically abusive during your childhood. It had been a very difficult household to grow up in with both your mother and your father. Did going back there, Cynthia, bring back memories from childhood, even though you had that certainty that you wanted to care for your father? Was it emotionally difficult when you got there?
Oh, it certainly did bring back memories. And yes, it was emotionally difficult. It was physically and logistically challenging. Anyone who's done dementia care, I think, can relate to that. But it was also challenging also because he didn't believe, he didn't understand that he had dementia. That was the kind of dementia he had. That was part of his condition. So he had no awareness that he was in trouble and in need of care. So he actually actively fought care, and he was angry with me for being there and for trying to help him, in fact. So that was emotional. But also, yeah, the surfacing of all of these memories, being back in the city where I used to live, where I had partially grown up, being around things from my childhood in his home, and being, you know, spending so much time with him, which was more time than I'd done since childhood, and possibly even then. I was spending, you know, morning till night in trying to look after him. So all of that surfaced a lot of memories. So between the layers of the kind of present day challenges, plus layered with the challenges of the past, things that he and I had never talked about or processed in any way, it was really very difficult emotionally too.
Well, yeah. And Cynthia, you've written that you realized when caring for him that he was very sensitive to tone of voice. So you had to make sure you had this kind of calm, serene persona operating as well. Were there things that you can tell us about that were ways that you protected yourself, ways that you said, I'm going to try and make this emotionally safe for myself?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I did such a great job of that. That's part of what my story is about. Sort of I started unraveling in a way. It was very, very tough, a tough time. But I, you know, I found sort of comfort and solace in very small things and small moments. I also had my partner from afar who was here in Sydney, you know, texts back and forth. I had some old friends there that were trying to help. And all of those sort of small gestures from other people meant an awful lot because primarily I was on my own with this. And I guess I would say the thing that helped me the most was feeling my feelings, you know, just allowing the feelings to come because they're great washes of feeling. And, you know, sort of like just allowing myself to feel almost like the different feelings from the different ages of me, inside of me, if you will, that all of these time periods seem to be coexisting at the same time and very present, you know, previous years, very present in my heart. So it was kind of like, I think what helped me the most was just letting myself feel all the feelings that I was having and just hanging in, if that makes sense.
Well, yes. Were you able to look at your father differently too and, I guess, speculate about what feelings he might be going through or have gone through?
Well, I think actually that had always been my focus, to tell you the truth. As a kid who was, you know, in a really dysfunctional, abusive type household, I was very focused on my parents, on what they needed, on what they felt, on, you know, you get really sensitive to, is an explosion about to happen? You know, the moods, the shifting moods of the parents in a situation like that. So I had always been, I would say, very, very focused. In fact, it was more like the journey of my life has been having to focus on myself, having to get in tune with what do I feel, what do I want, what do I need, because I was very, very externally focused even as a child in a kind of an almost emotional caregiver role for these adults that I was living with.
We are getting some very powerful texts as we speak to you, Cynthia Dearborn. The book is called The Year My Family Unraveled, and Cynthia's written about going back to the States where she grew up in what you've heard was an abusive and very difficult and traumatic household. Some of these texts, my mother was an alcoholic and always favoured my sister. She turned dad against me through, I don't know, jealousy or just dislike for me. Now my mum has dementia. She's forgotten all her meanness and she's sober. She tells me she loves me and is kind to me. It is so surreal to hear this. I think of mum as my third child and I look after her. I have so many questions that will never be answered. Cynthia, did your father change while you were with him and leading up to his passing away?
Yes, he did. In the final years of his life, I would say he had always been a very anxious person. That was part of the difficulty. He had been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder at some point. He had a lot of routines. He was very fretful. And in the final years of his life, as the dementia progressed, it was as if he forgot what he had been so worried about. So his fears seemed to fall away. And I have to say, strange as it may sound, he seemed to enjoy life a lot more. I mean, given partly that was my efforts getting him into care, I don't think it would have gone that way otherwise. But so he was looked after and he actually seemed to relax. He was in the present, the way dementia has this amazing ability to just bring people into the present now, what is happening now. At least that's how it was for my dad. And so we were able to kind of enjoy each other's company, and without all of the fraughtness that had always been there. So it was quite a gift in a way in the end. Quite a beautiful, we had many beautiful, tender moments actually together.
I'm really glad to hear that. Let's talk for a moment too, Cynthia, about your mother, because your relationship with her had been very rocky at different times too. Why was that?
My mother, like my father, was a person I would say now, you know, with a lot of problems. She was an alcoholic and had had many difficult things happen in her life, as had my dad previous to them becoming parents. They had a very unhappy marriage and were fighting every day kind of thing, very volatile household. And my mother, when I was 23 years old, I came out as a lesbian. And when I told my mother, she disowned me. She basically said, I'm dead. You've killed me. You stabbed me in the heart. You are not my daughter. Don't call me. And she refused to speak to me on the phone or to see me. And this went on for 27 years.
27.
Yeah. So I was cut off from her, which was one reason I think my father was so important to me, my father and my stepmother both, because they were my family, again, as an only child. And also, I had mentioned, you know, I'm from the U.S., but I had actually grown up in the U.S. in Europe, and I lived in like five different states in the U.S. and four different countries, you know, by the age of seven. So there was a lot of moving around, which meant I was not around my extended family growing up. So I wasn't around cousins and uncles and aunts and grandparents. So my family was my mom and dad, and then my mother cutting me off at 23 meant I had my dad and his wife. So I think that was also why I was so keen to help my dad in any way I could. He had actually, even though he had been very inappropriate and violent as when I was a kid, he had been there for me through my 20s and 30s and my 40s, whereas my mother wouldn't even take my calls.
And you received a call from her on the day after the day of your father's memorial, I think, from your mother trying to reconnect. Cynthia, what happened when you started talking to your mum again? Was that a process of forgiveness or some other kind of reassessment or absorption of what had gone on?
Yeah, actually, it was very dramatic getting that call just a half hour before his memorial was to begin. First call in 27 years from my mother. It was quite amazing. I was wondering, am I being punked? Is this some kind of joke? We did end up reestablishing a relationship. She agreed to speak to me and even to see me. And it, I would say it was a kind of a gradual, gentle process that took a bit of time to establish a kind of a, get into a certain rhythm with each other and, you know, begin to feel comfortable and enjoy each other. Sorry, now I've forgotten what you asked me about
Well, I'm just wondering whether you,
How I
forgave the parents or was it some other process?
Actually, I don't really relate to forgiveness. I know a lot of people talk about it in that way. For me, it's more that these things coexist. You know, my parents made some big mistakes as parents, as many parents do. They had had some difficult upbringings themselves, as many people do. And they also did some great things and wonderful things as parents. It's a mix. And so I think of it as, you know, they, the good and the bad are all true. I don't have to sort of only recall the good and push the bad away and pretend that didn't happen, but neither do I need to only recall the bad and forget all of the good. For me, it's about these coexist. Relationships are complex, and the truth, you know, of our lives, I think, is often very mixed, especially with family relationships. They're mixed relationships, full of functionings and dysfunctionings, and they have different, you know, better or worse at different times, but in the same, you know, 10-minute conversation, you can have some difficult things come up and have some fun too. So for me, it's more about I embrace and accept that these are, you know, not perfect relationships, less than ideal, and they're not going to give me everything I need emotionally as an adult, that I actually look to other people than my parents for emotional support. I don't need to get it from them in order to stay connected to them.
Cynthia, it's been so fascinating speaking with you. Thank you so much for sharing your story on Life Matters today. Cynthia Dearborn's an academic and author. Her book is called The Year My Family Unraveled.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.